We're talking about the state of unions in our country here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Union membership in the U.S. is hovering around 10%. That's according to figures released last week by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Membership has fallen sharply in recent decades. In the early 80s, unions represented about 1 in 5 workers. Now it's 1 in 10. Are you in a union? What changes have you noticed since Wisconsin passed Act 10 and became a right-to-work state? Are you interested in joining a union? What workplace issues do you want to address? We're at 800-642-1234. Stephen Greenhouse reported on labor and workplace issues for nearly 2 decades at the New York Times. He's written 2 books on labor in America. Stephen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here.
So in the past few years, we've seen an uptick in strikes. Teachers have walked out in a number of states. Almost 50,000 GM workers, including some in Wisconsin, they walked off the job. And we haven't seen the 2019 figures, the tally on the total number of people who went on strike. But what are you seeing in terms of workers going on strike?
So there has been a big upsurge of strikes, Kate. And I think a lot of workers see that the stock market's at record levels, that corporate profits are at record levels, and their wages are really just inching up very, you know, not much at all, and they say something's broken here. I think, a lot of workers at General Motors helped rescue General Motors from bankruptcy. They took wage freezes. They adopted a two-tier wage structure, which made things much worse for people on the bottom. You know, great plants like the Janesville plant in Wisconsin closed, and the workers felt we really sacrificed to keep GM in business, and we've hardly gotten raises, and they said this isn't fair. I think as with the teacher strikes, the GM workers felt we're not getting our fair share, we're suffering from years of wage freezes, and we're seeing this new, flexing of muscles by unions across the nation, because a lot of workers in a lot of fields, grad students, adjunct professors, hotel workers, nurses, just feel that they're not getting their fair share, and they're standing up to like share in the nation's prosperity.
So have you seen these teacher strikes around the country more as a gateway for other workers and other industries to go on strike?
So in my book, which is called Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor, I write a lot about the teacher strikes, and I explain some things that I think a lot of people don't understand. The first teacher strike was in West Virginia, and that really got the ball rolling, created this wave of momentum. And, the teachers in West Virginia, they're paid 48th lowest in the nation. And each year, their health premiums were going up, 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 up. And the governor, the richest man in West Virginia, announced that I'm going to be generous to you. I'm going to give you a raise of 1% a year for the next 5 years. And the teachers saw that the West Virginia government was giving big tax cuts to the rich, big tax cuts to corporations. And they said, this is crazy. We're hardly getting any wage increases. We have to pay more out of pocket for health coverage. We're going backwards, and the rich are doing very well. And it was kind of, we're fed up and we're not going to take it anymore. And I think that really started this whole wave of worker activism. Next was Oklahoma and Kentucky and Arizona. Then we saw, more strikes. The big Marriott strike in 8 cities across the nation, the Stop and Shop strike in New England by 30,000 grocery workers. We've seen some hospital strikes. We've seen grad student strike at Harvard and University of Southern California, and then we saw the huge GM strike. So I think, successful strikes beget other strikes, and I think a lot of workers see their fellow workers in other industries doing well, and they say by striking, and they say, we want our fair share too. We're going to stand up and fight.
We're discussing how labor unions have evolved over time. Our guide is Stephen Greenhouse. He's an author and a longtime labor reporter for the New York Times. You can join in. Do you have questions about how unions have evolved over the past century? What do you think it will take for unions to, again, be a political force? Should they be a political and economic force? Is there a place for them in our economy or not? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Stephen, Wisconsin is a right-to-work state, passing Act 10 in 2011. Have you seen right-to-work legislation gaining momentum over the past decade?
So I was in, as a newspaper reporter for the New York Times, I was in Wisconsin. I was in Madison, covering the fight over Act 10. And I very much saw it as, partly Governor Walker saw it as a way to weaken unions and save money because they wouldn't be able to bargain over things like, better pensions, better health coverage. They could only bargain over wages. And under Act 10, they couldn't get wage increases above the inflation rate. So he wanted to really weaken unions. But I also think he and his fellow Republicans wanted to basically eviscerate, cripple public sector unions, teachers unions, social workers unions, government workers unions, because they were a political force that often supported the Democrats. And in my book, I explain that what happened in Wisconsin, both with Act 10 and the Right to Work bill. And for people who don't understand what Right to Work means, it's that if you're working in a union workplace and the union bargains higher wages for you and fights for you, but you don't have to pay any, you're not required to pay any dues or fees to the union that represents you. And I think as a result of what's happened in Wisconsin, Wisconsin has lost more union members over the past decade than any other state in the union. It's lost a higher percentage. It's lost 44% of its union members. That's dropped by 177,000. And I speak to some political scientists who say, Donald Trump won Wisconsin by 22,700 votes. And they think, wow, what would have happened if Wisconsin hadn't passed Act 10 and hadn't passed Right to Work? And if, unions were much bigger and stronger, there's a good chance that Donald Trump would have lost Wisconsin. And the story is very similar in Michigan and Pennsylvania, where both states have lost over 100,000 union members over the past decade. And Donald Trump won those states by far less than that. And I think, Republicans in other states say, well, look at how Right to Work has succeeded in Wisconsin and Michigan by weakening unions. We want to do that, too. And there really has been, as you said, Kate, some momentum. Right to Work laws are passed in West Virginia and Kentucky, and Republicans try to pass them in every state they can.
Let's take a call. Mark in Romance. Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. See, one of the things that really concerns me on labor issues is how the media covers labor, or more accurately, how it does not cover labor. I note that National Public Radio has all kinds of stories on how to be an entrepreneur and how to build a business and so on. And there isn't a single podcast on labor issues with National Public Radio. I think it's great you guys are doing this show. But it used to be newspapers had labor reporters.
Mark, we're a little short on time here, and I want Stephen to respond to that. Stephen, what is coverage of labor like?
So Mark is right. There's much less than there used to be. I remember when I began covering labor for the New York Times, in the mid-1990s, the Chicago Tribune, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Boston Globe, a lot of, second-tier papers had labor reporters. And there was a period when I was the only full-time labor reporter at a newspaper in the country, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, the Chicago Tribune, had gotten rid of labor reporters. Now there has been somewhat of a resurgence in labor reporting, I think dating somewhat from the Great Recession. But they're still much less than there used to be. And I hear a lot of, when I go around the country speaking about my book, many people complain, why aren't there more people covering unions and the struggles that workers face today?
We have to pause right here with Stephen Greenhouse, who's covered unions in America for decades. Your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the decline of unions this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The numbers of workers who took part in large-scale strikes shot up to 500,000 people in 2018. That's up from 25,000 people in 2017, according to the latest figures released last week by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Strike participation numbers for 2019 have not been finalized yet. Have you ever gone on strike? Have you ever wanted to strike but were worried about losing your job? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Author and longtime labor journalist Stephen Greenhouse stays with us. Stephen, one reason union membership may have declined in the last year was the first full year since the Supreme Court's decision in the Janus case. The court ruled that it was unconstitutional to allow unions to require collective bargaining fees from public employees. What impact do you see the Janus ruling having on unions today?
I think that you're right, Kate. The Janus Union hurt a lot of unions because under a unanimous Supreme Court decision 41 years earlier, the court said that states and unions can require public sector workers to pay dues to the unions that, you know, bargain for them, that win raises for them. But the more conservative Supreme Court under President Trump ruled that it's a violation of the First Amendment to require them to pay dues or fees. So a lot of workers say, hey, you know, why don't I just go on a free ride? Why don't I, you know, get the benefits of a union? I'll get the raises. I'll get the pensions they provide me. And, you know, why should I pay dues? And the unions have tried very hard to re-engage their members to say, you know, we do terrific things for you. We win raises for you. We win pensions for you. If you get fired, you know, for being five minutes late to work, you know, we'll go to bat for you and try to keep your job. And, you know, we're a valuable institution, not just helping you, but we help society by, you know, fighting for, you know, for poor people. And they try to get people to recommit. And a union membership hasn't fallen as much as unions feared as a result of Janus, but it has fallen.
Has there been a financial impact?
Yes, there's been a financial impact. And, you know, the Janus case was financed by a lot of billionaire conservative groups, the Bradley Foundation of Wisconsin, which helped, you know, back Scott Walker in Act 10 was a big backer of Janus. And they, you know, as with Act 10, you know, a lot of the sponsors of Janus wanted to really weaken unions. On one hand, they say we're fighting for worker freedom so that workers can't be required to pay dues to the unions representing them. But I find it curious that all these conservative groups that say they're fighting for workers, you know, do nothing else really to help workers except, you know, fight for things like right to work, to weaken unions. So it's been, you know, it's been tough on the teachers' unions and tough on the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And the unions are learning, you know, they're, you know, fighting back by trying to, you know, sit down with individual members and say, look, you know, we provide a valuable service to you. It would be good out of solidarity if you join others and continue contributing to your union by paying dues.
Let's take another call. Charlie is joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Charlie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question for your guest is, you know, I look at the other side of the coin, and how do labor unions promote business with it and entrepreneurship and then promote the actual business here in the United States? There's no labor union if there's no labor, because there's no job. Unless we go on both sides to promote the actual business itself, the businesses are going to falter, and then there's no job, and people are basically cutting their own throat. So how do labor unions promote business and jobs in the United States? Thanks.
Yeah, Charlie, thank you for the call. Stephen?
Charlie, that's a great question. I appreciate your asking it. You know, take trade. You know, no one has fought harder than labor unions to, you know, help prevent jobs from going overseas as a result of things like NAFTA and trade with China. It's really labor unions that have led the way in trying to keep the jobs here. And Donald Trump, in fighting on NAFTA and China, were really picking up the cues that labor unions put out there. Second, you know, Samuel Gompers, you know, the great founder of the American Federation of Labor, said, you know, we need to keep corporations alive and thriving, because if we don't, we lose our jobs. So I think a lot of unions, some, you know, Charlie, I'm sure we agree, have been myopic and short-sighted and haven't done enough to keep their corporations in business. But, you know, many workers and union leaders I speak with say, we want to make sure the company we worked with thrives. We want to make sure it survives. There are differences about, well, can the company still thrive if we get a 4% raise rather than a 2.5% raise? But, you know, you talk to workers and they say, we want to keep GM alive. We want to keep Chrysler alive. You know, we want to keep Boeing alive. You know, they're eager for their companies to thrive and make profits. But there's a debate about, do they need maximum profits, or can the profits be somewhat smaller? The companies still do very well, but more of the profits and prosperity shared with the workers.
We're talking about the evolution of labor unions this hour. Our guide is Stephen Greenhouse. He's an author. He's a longtime labor reporter. You can join in. Are you part of a labor union? What's your job, and what do you get out of your union membership? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Ashley now in Manitowoc. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, and this is the first time I've ever called, and I listen all the time.
No, thank you.
Sure. But yeah, I was going to comment on the fact that a lot of the people aren't joining labor unions because in our instructional videos, when we first start training, they tell you not to. They very specifically go over all the reasons why you shouldn't. And it's almost sort of creepily threatening. So yeah, they really do tell you not to join.
Ashley, like, may I ask what industry you work in?
I worked for a retail drugstore chain. I feel nervy about mentioning which one, but it's,
sure,
you know, it's a big one. And I recently quit, and I'm super glad I did, because there are a lot of corporate policies that are cringy.
Ashley, thanks. Stephen, are workers deterred at the outset from getting involved?
Thank you. In my book, in my new book, you know, Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor, I write about Walmart, that when people go through orientation, they see a video that basically says, you know, don't join unions. Unions only want you to pay dues so that they could fatten their pockets. And I talk about, you know, FedEx and Coca-Cola telling their drivers, you know, you shouldn't join a union. And, you know, companies often don't like unions because companies like to make all the decisions on their own. They often feel, you know, why should we bother with conferring with, you know, workers about, you know, decisions? And they feel that unions, you know, impede their flexibility and maybe, you know, reduce their profits as well. And, you know, they would just as soon not have a union because unions, you know, want a say. And nowadays, you know, corporate management, you know, when they go to business school, they learn that the main thing, the most important thing is flexibility, managerial prerogatives, and they feel that unions get in the way. And also, you know, corporations, you know, people go to business school here, it's important to maximize profits. And when unions say your profits are too high, you could share more of your profits with the workers in forms in the form of better health coverage, better pensions, higher wages. You know, again, a lot of corporate managers don't like that because that gets in the way of profit maximization. So they tell a lot of workers, unions are bad. They're not going to help you. Workers like unions. You know, most workers like unions because they realize the benefits of unions. There's a Gallup poll that came out this year saying that, you know, the public approval rating of unions is near the highest point it's been in 50 years. 64% of workers support unions. 1 in 2 non-union workers say they would like to join a union if they could tomorrow. That's up from the 30% 20 years earlier. So there's a lot more, there's a lot of enthusiasm about unions, and I think a lot of companies like your drug retailing company Walmart feel that they need to kind of persuade workers that unions are really bad for them when they're generally really good for them.
Stephen, I want to pick your brain for a moment. There was a study out of MIT last year published in the Journal of Law and Economics that found that workers report greater life satisfaction after their state has become a right-to-work state, and the effects were especially large among union workers. What might that be driving, that there is actual satisfaction in these right-to-work states?
I'm not familiar with that study, and I'm pretty, and I know a lot of professors who teach labor relations at MIT. I've never heard of that. So I'm really, you know, frankly, Kate, I really question that study. I realize that, you know, some workers will feel that, you know, they have freedom not to pay dues because of right to work, and that's good. I think a lot of other workers feel that when there's right to work, some of their fellow workers unfortunately become free riders and don't pay dues. And various studies have shown that in states that become right to work, generally wages go down overall compared to some other states. So Kate, that result surprises me. I wish you told me about it. I would have checked on it, because, you know, this study I just mentioned about 50% of workers say they would like to join a union. Non-union workers say they'd like to join a union. That's from a major MIT study, the major MIT study done in recent years on labor. So I don't remember that.
Sure.
That about right to work.
Stephen, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here, Kate.
Stephen Greenhouse has been a labor reporter for nearly two decades, covered labor and workforce issues, and has two books on it. Coming up, two UW Health nurses talk about their effort to establish a union and improve working conditions. Are you a worker interested in forming a union? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're spending the hour on unions and focusing in on nurses at UW Health University Hospital in Madison, who have formed a new union. Employee unions were phased out at UW Hospital and Clinics in 2014, but nurses began organizing nearly a year ago and distributed support cards last September. Do you think that employees like nurses at publicly owned hospitals should be allowed to collectively bargain? We're at 800-642-1234. Mariah Clark and Kate Walton helped establish a nurses' union at UW Health. Mariah has worked at UW Hospital's emergency room for 11 years. Mariah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And Kate Walton has been a staff nurse in emergency medicine at UW Health for the past 3 years. Kate, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks.
Well, Kate, let's start with you. Why did you want to help organize a union at UW Health?
We've been noticing over the last few years, so I've been there 3 years, almost four, and even in just that short period of time, I've noticed there's been a huge change in the voice that the nurses have. And that's been really it's become very top-down, very administration-led, and nurses and the people at the bedside making decisions just don't have the voice that we used to have. So we don't have any say, really, at this point in decision-making, in policy. Everything's just sort of been handed to us, and that's been a huge change since when I started almost 4 years ago.
And Mariah, you've been with the hospital a number of years, more than a decade. What have you seen and what is driving you to form this union?
Well, I've been there for 12 years now, and it's been interesting because the thing that really appealed to me about UW when I first started was it's a teaching institution, it's a research institution, and it's known for its compassionate, very collaborative healthcare. The teamwork was a huge part of it for me. And being able to bring concerns up and have them actually listened to and acted on was a hallmark in my first several years there. Our last contract, you know, after Act 10, our last contracts expired in 2014, and the hospital assured us very little would change. We noticed some sort of gradual changes. Then a couple of years ago, when the hospital system began more aggressive expansion and brought in some outside consultants, there was a lot more austerity and a lot more cuts to time, education, resources, staffing, and it made it a lot more difficult to provide the kind of quality care that not only I wanted to provide as a nurse, but that UW was known for. So a big part of my reason for taking part in this unionizing effort is to bring that back and to have nurses have a really valuable ongoing contribution to patient care and policy at the hospital that influences everyone and makes it the best place to get care.
Did you find that you had an avenue to relay back on some of those changes and how they were working and how they were not working?
In the last couple of years? No, not at all. Even if you have a wonderfully receptive manager and administrator, you felt like you could talk to them, but that those concerns would kind of stop there. They didn't then percolate upwards through the system. And we used to have a shared governance system, which we still do, but instead of really having a good two-way communication, we mostly have things handed down from on high and don't really get to have a good conversation anymore.
Kate, from your vantage point in emergency medicine, how have workloads for nurses changed at the hospital in recent years?
We've seen a huge increase in the amount of in the workload. So staffing has been a big issue. One of the first things that happened with this consultancy that came in was that they cut staffing levels, and this was throughout the hospital. So this isn't just emergency department. We sort of have a unique perspective on it because everybody, almost everybody comes through us to go into the hospital to get admitted. And so we've seen, we had staffing cuts. We used to, in our department, they took away some of our float nurses on some of the days of the week.
And float nurses would be nurses who could move through different departments filling in?
In that, and as well as in our department, we would also have nurses that didn't have a specific patient assignment, but then could help float, could come over and help if there was a major trauma or someone was really sick. They could jump in if you had two or three sick patients, because we, you never really know what rolls in the door till it's there.
Oh, so kind of evening out the workload a little
right,
bit.
Right, helping jump in, covering lunches even. And then we also, around the same time, the hospital cut the critical care float pool in the hospital. They were called Save Our Shift, SOS. And they were literally the people you would call if, and this was hospital-wide, if you had a patient that was suddenly getting critical, if you had somebody that needed close monitoring and they needed to leave the unit, and you couldn't leave your other, you know, your other patients behind. So they cut that down from, I think, five nurses at a time to one. They cut our staffing in our department. They cut staffing throughout departments. They're also sending people home and trying to pay more attention to what the staffing number said it should be versus what the number of patients said how many nurses you should have. So what we've seen is that throughout the hospital, nurses have more patients, and an increase in the patient load is just unsafe. It makes it a lot harder to spend time with your patients, to take really good care of your patients. And honestly, nurses are the frontline warning system. So the less time you have with your patients and the less ability you have to monitor them, to keep a close eye on them, and especially in the emergency department when, like I said, you don't know what rolls through the door till it's there, you know, you can have three critical patients at the same time. And without those resources, then you have to juggle three critical patients at the same time. Yeah. And we have a really strong team in our department and throughout the hospital. But so, you know, everybody pulls together as best they can. But we've really noticed that, like, it's been really difficult some days. And then in the meantime, there's also, because we've had staffing issues, then we have patients boarding the emergency department. So spending overnight or spending multiple hours waiting on an inpatient room because there's either nowhere to put them or there aren't nurses to take care of them. And so then we have extra patients in the emergency department, not enough staff.
Backing up,
right. It's been compounding really quickly, and it's been made things even more difficult.
Talking about the role of labor unions in Wisconsin right now, we have Kate Walton and Mariah Clark. They're two emergency room nurses who helped form a nurses union at UW Health. You can join in. Are you a worker interested in forming a union, or someone in management who oversees employees? What questions do you have about the process? How have you seen unions evolve in your industry? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Janet now, joining us from North Fond du Lac. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I congratulate Maya and Kate on their efforts, and I support them 100% as a patient. Talking, it really, I can relate to the, you know, I was in Agnesian in Fond du Lac, and I rang my buzzer in the middle of the night for a nurse for evidently having to go to the bathroom or something, and it just seems like you got to wait forever, you know, and it's not the nurse's fault. Ever since Reagan broke the air controllers union way back when, you know, our economy was healthy during the 50s and the 60s. The average family could spend and save at the same time, but it's gone downhill because of the Republicans.
Janet, thanks for the call. Janet is taking a much broader historical bent here, Mariah, on the evolution of unions. I noticed earlier, too, that when you heard SOS, that you really had a reaction there. And I wanted to ask you about that impact of SOS nurses. What do they bring?
The SOS nurses are just an amazing group of critical care nurses. They can go anywhere in the hospital, but they especially help us in the ER. And their absence is really felt now that they've been taken away whenever we would have a sick trauma or someone who was very, very ill, they would come in and be able to even that workload so that you could do the best patient care that you possibly could. And we used to see them, even if they'd come down, check on us, hey, do you have the resources you need? And sometimes the answer was, yeah, we're doing great. Thank you so much. See you later. We don't need you right now. And then other times they'd pop in and you'd be overjoyed because you needed that help and you needed that critical care help right then. And there they were. And now we don't have that sort of resource when we need it.
Kate?
And the other thing, too, is they're experienced critical care nurses. They've seen everything. And so that's the other nice thing was that when you have if you have newer staff, people that don't have the experience, which we've had a lot of turnover, and so we've had that lately, then you have that resource that you can reach out to and they can help help assess a patient or help, you know, sort of figure out where to go from there. And I know the inpatient staff, too, has noticed that that was a big help for them and a resource for them that they don't have. If a patient, you know, just doesn't look right or they can't quite figure out if something, you know, if they should be concerned, they should be paging the doctors, they should, you know, be intervening. And I know that's a resource that they've really missed, too.
Mariah, this isn't all about forming a union because you're looking at wages, trying to increase wages. It sounds more about quality of life at work.
Absolutely. You know, we really, when you talk to the nurses about why are we doing this, when we're doing our authorization card drive and things like that, we ask people, you know, what's bringing you to this? And overwhelmingly, it was all about patient and family care and providing quality nursing. One of the things that was touched on a lot was the fact that you got into this job to help people. And when you feel like your hands are tied due to bureaucracy or austerity, it's really a moral insult. It contributes to burnout. It's all about being able to do quality care, and you feel like you can't. So you have young nurses who don't have the mentoring that they deserve. You have experienced nurses who feel like they can't practice under these conditions in good conscience. And so you have people fleeing the working conditions, which compounds the problems at the hospital, and it impacts our patients and our families. They're just not getting what they need.
Talking about how nurses at UW Hospital are trying to revive their union that expired in 2014, Mariah Clark and Kate Walton are two emergency room nurses who've helped form a new nurses union at UW Health over the last year. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Are you a worker interested in forming a union, or perhaps someone in management who oversees employees? What questions do you have about unions? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're spending the hour on unions, looking at efforts by nurses at UW Hospital to restart their union. Nurses began organizing nearly a year ago. If the union were recognized by UW Hospital, it would include about 2,000 nurses. How have you seen unions change healthcare in the past? Join in, 800-642-1234. UW Health nurses Mariah Clark and Kate Walton help lead the effort to form a new nurses union, and they stay with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Tom is in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Thank you. Good morning. I grew up in a union household, but I really don't think I appreciated unions as much until I took part in the protests here in Madison in 2011. I found a lot of people who had no idea what unions were doing, and they said, well, they used to be valuable, but not anymore. And I said, well, haven't you ever enjoyed a weekend overtime, 40-hour work week, or you and your neighbor's kids aren't in sweatshops? And I said, it's a very, very important thing to do. We need to study labor history. You can get on NPR or WPR and listen to Marketplace, but there's not as much room for people to talk about labor law, and it's very, very important to do that. And the other thing is that even if you were in a non-union shop, you still enjoyed benefits from the union because there were so many businesses, I remember when I was growing up, that they would do anything they could to, quote unquote, keep the unions out. So therefore, they were presenting wages and benefits to their workers that were even higher than union wages just to keep the unions out. So even if you were at a non-union shop.
Yeah, Tom, thanks so much for your perspective. Kate, have you noticed more conversations at work about unions?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, it's we can't talk, mm-hmm. we can't organize at work. So, but we have had a lot of conversations about what would this mean? You know, a lot of questions from folks about, you know, if this happens, then what would this mean for our abilities to negotiate for better patient staffing ratios, for better education time, you know, the things that we're looking for. And so a lot of good conversations about that, a lot of concerns too. You know, again, like Mariah said, it's not the primary question, but, you know, questions about like what changes are going to be made to our benefits, for instance. You know, and we really, there's a lot of people that feel like we just don't have a lot of agency right now. And so this is, you know, one way that we're able to advocate for ourselves and create a structure where we have a voice together.
Mariah, what's been the reaction from UW Health's management to your nurses' union?
Well, I don't think we've gotten a ton of reaction from, like, individual managers and administrators besides to, at least, for example, my director welcomed the chance to have a dialogue. They have to toe a very important line between being nurses themselves, even though they're not at the bedside, and being a part of the management structure. So that's something they have to be careful with. On the other hand, we've been talking directly with the board, and honestly, it's been kind of disappointing that they've chosen to release statements, you know, minutes after talking to us, and instead of really engaging in a meaningful dialogue. So we're continuing to meet with them one-on-one and hopefully educate them about why this is within our legal rights and clarify what we'd actually like from them. Hopefully that we'll get them to see the right thing and do what's best for patients and for staff.
Taking another call now, Tracy in Madison. Tracy, hi.
Hi. I want to know, as a consumer of health care and a concerned citizen, what can I do to support the nurses in their efforts?
Thank you, Tracy. Mariah?
One of the things that you can do is, first of all, I really love the support. Thank you so much. We have a union town hall at the Madison Labor Temple coming up this Wednesday at 6 p.m. That's at 1602 South Park, room 201 A and B. And we would love to see as many nurses, supporters, community members, leaders, everyone. We'd just love to see people there. You can talk to the nurses, find out more about what's going on and why we're doing this. And we'll have more offerings of concrete steps for public support.
Kate, what is the strategy going forward? What tactics will you employ to try to navigate some of these issues?
Right now we're working to speak with the board. We've been talking with them individually as well as we just addressed them on Thursday. And we're basically just trying to have a conversation with them, explain why this is so important and how, you know, all the things that we're seeing and make sure that they're aware of all the things that we've been seeing throughout the UW system. And then from here, really just we've got a majority of nurses, a strong majority of nurses throughout the hospital, throughout pretty much all the hospitals, all the clinics, almost every department. And we're hearing the same things from all the nurses too. So this isn't just one or two departments. This is throughout the system. So really to talk with them and, you know, speak together with one voice for what we need.
We're talking about the role of labor unions in Wisconsin with Kate Walton and Mariah Clark. They're two emergency care nurses who helped form a nurses union at UW Health. You can join in 800-642-1234. Let's go to Troy now in Muskego. Hi, Troy. Oh, Troy is no longer there. Mariah, I want to ask you, how have you talked to, or perhaps not, nurses in other states where they can unionize? Have you reached out at all to other unions on this?
Personally, I haven't talked to anybody out of state except for just my friends who are nurses. But we are working with SEIU, which is one of the largest nursing unions in the country, and it's who represented us before. So we have a nationwide support structure via SEIU.
And how have they responded to your efforts over the last year to pull together in a right-to-work state?
They've been amazingly supportive, and they've been able to engage their resources to see things. For example, we're asking the board for the ability to meet and confer, which is very different from the collective bargaining that was prohibited by Act 10. it's still a voluntary process, but it's a separate process. And that's part of how the board actually can legally recognize our union and continue to have an actual real dialogue so that we can have a say in ensuring that the quality care we're known for stays exceptional, versus the collective bargaining that they've been hiding behind going, oh, we can't do that because of Act 10.
Yeah, can you explain a little bit more about the two different processes that you see going on there?
Well, I'm not a policy expert or a lawyer, but my understanding is that collective bargaining is very, very rigidly managed by law. Meet and confer is an agreeable process that has been used successfully throughout Dane County and the state, certainly, for interactions between government employees affected by Act 10.
Kate, what would you like patients of UW Health to know about the hospital system and how it is working now and where you want to see it going?
First, I want them to know that we're still fighting for them. This is really about making the hospital, continuing to have the hospital be the best hospital in the state. And, you know, as nurses at UW, we're still committed to taking excellent care of our patients. We're doing everything we can. And, you know, I think if you support us, you can always, like Mariah said, we've got the Labor Temple Town Hall, but also just, you know, let folks know that you appreciate the work your nurses are doing and understand that we're doing as much as we can with a lot less resources than we've had in the past, too. So I don't, you know, I don't want somebody lying in a hospital bed to, I'm not trying to say you should just be patient, because that's, you know, you should get the care that you deserve, and we're working and stretching as hard as we can to provide that care. But, you know, speak up to administration of patient relations if you feel like your nurses are overworked, if you feel like your nurses aren't able to spend the time with you that they really should be able to because of their patient load, you know, and ask your nurses, ask how things are going and how the changes they've seen. But we're still fighting for them, and we're still taking the best care of everybody the best we can with the resources we have. And, you know, really, I've seen some extraordinary teamwork and extraordinary care, even with things the way they are right now.
Mariah, just a few seconds left. Are you optimistic?
Yeah, I'm, you know, you can't not be optimistic. This is the right thing for the hospital. It's the right thing for our patients. It's the right thing for our nurses. So I hope that the board will see that and recognize our union so that we can keep working together and make UW Health the best it can be.
Mariah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Kate, thank you as well.
Thanks so much.
Mariah Clark and Kate Walton helped establish a nurses union at UW Health. Mariah works in UW Hospital's emergency room. Kate is an emergency medicine nurse at UW Health. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.